with that, we're in Genesis chapter 36. And I find it very interesting that as we're here in Genesis chapter 36, that we're going to be talking specifically, the entire chapter is dedicated to Esau. Esau was the son of Hagar and Abraham. And he was the son that wasn't of promise. He was the son that was the, I'm sorry, he was the son of Isaac, but he was not the son of promise. He was the son of what? The flesh. If you remember, the son of the promise was Jacob. But what ended up happening was that as Jacob was trying to gain his inheritance in a worldly fashion, Esau tried to steal it back, and you had this fleshly battle going on. And what ended up happening was that all of the children of Esau became very corrupt, and they walked in the same fleshly manner as Esau did, because they were fighting against each other. And if you remember, this fleshly battle led Jacob, the son of promise, into a 20-something year backslide as a Christian, or as a follower of God at the time. Esau, on the other hand, it just pushed him completely away from the promise at all. Esau didn't have to leave the promised land. Esau didn't have to go and do what he did and go to Edom and start this entire other nation and all this other stuff. But he did that because he lived after the flesh. And that is one of the things that happens when we live after the flesh. When we pursue the flesh, then we become consumed by it. Now, it's interesting that as we are here in Genesis chapter 36, it starts by giving us a little bit of the background. And I want you to understand something. Both Esau and Jacob could have lived in the promised land. They both should have lived in the promised land together. This is an interesting problem. God told Abraham that your descendants will inhabit the promised land. Now, the problem that Abraham had was that he had two sons. He had Isaac and Ishmael. Ishmael, as we all know, was the father of all of the Arab nations. And because of his sin with the flesh, the Ishmaelites to this day believe that they have dibs on the promised land. To this day, they're fighting over the promised land. And all of the Ishmaelites, the Arab nations, are trying to wipe Israel off the map, and all of the Israelites are trying to defend their place there in Israel. And I don't know if you've been following the news, but they've been sending bunches of missiles and stuff into the area surrounding Israel to try to wipe them off of the map. They've had Iran creating a nuclear bomb to be able to wipe Israel off of the map. You have Turkey and Lebanon and all these other countries preparing for war. You even have this idea of Russia, who is mentioned in the Bible, by the way, to be in the end times one of the number one countries to attack Israel. You think there's any coincidence that Russia right now is taking over parts of the Ukraine and Crimea and that they're preparing for war? It's very interesting to watch as the world theater prepares itself for the final act when the Lord comes back. But as we look at what's going on, as we look at what has gone on since Abraham, what Abraham did was he lived in the flesh. And because of that, his sin continues to be a thorn in Israel's side. I guess we could say it's more than a thorn in their side. I guess we could say that his sin continues to be an affront to all of Israel. They are surrounded by the enemies created by Abraham through one mistake 4,000 years ago. Now, I want you to think about that. One mistake 4,000 years later is affecting every descendant of Abraham to this day. That is a scary thought of the consequences of our actions. And so we get to chapter 36. Genesis, and it's going to talk about Esau. Now, just in the same way that Abraham had one flesh, one fleshly desire, one fleshly sin, if you would, here. So did Isaac. And if you remember, Isaac, he didn't want to bless the right one. Remember what Isaac's wife told him? You have to bless this one. What the Lord said. What everybody knew to be the right way. But yet he still followed after the flesh, and it came to be that when all of these things ended, that God was going to have his way anyway. And he created animosity and dissension and frustration between his two sons. And now the sons hated each other, and it started this whirlwind of problems in his life. Remember, because of Isaac's inability to seek after God and do his will, it caused Jacob to backslide for 20 years, Esau to hate his brother vehemently for almost his entire life. But now, as God has continued to bless the descendants of Isaac, even in their backsliding and their sin, God does not stop to bless people. God continues to bless Jacob's sons and Jacob and Esau and his sons, because God says, my mercy is great and my kindness and my gentleness. I hope that they would bring you back to me. And so we have these two backsliders, and Jacob is finally coming back to serve the Lord. Finally, he's making his way towards where God has him to be. Now, he went to Bethel, and then he went past Bethel, and he's kind of on this roller coaster ride of a following after the Lord, but he's on his way. He's at least going in the right direction at this point, and he's in the promised land. Esau, on the other hand, we're going to see how he continues to spiral out of control. His descendants would persecute, kill, invade, and steal from the Jewish people for another few hundred years until they were finally taken care of by the children of Israel. So his descendants were going to be problems for the descendants of Jacob. Why? Because they had walked away from the promises of God. So it says here in chapter 36, verse 1, now that this is the genealogy of Esau, who is Edom. Now it's interesting, the word Edom there means red. Remember, Esau was the redhead, and he sold his birthright for some red soup. And then he moved to the land of red rocks called Edom. And so this guy really liked the name red, okay? He was just into red at all costs. And we're going to find as we watch him that his passion for fleshly things, something arbitrary like a color, led him astray. Isn't it funny how many arbitrary things, how many things that have absolutely no weight or matter at all in the universe cause us to go astray so quickly? So many things that are just ridiculous. Have you ever seen somebody who could be led astray by a sports team? You ever seen somebody who is consumed with a sports team, who is their whole mind and objectivity is consumed by their sports team, and they watch it on their TV and on the internet and on their phone, and they listen to the stats in their car, and if you ask them anything about their sports team, they can tell you. And by the way, I'm not against sports or having a favorite sports team. But you know the kind of people I'm talking about, that if they are this a fan of this team and they see somebody else in a car that has a license plate frame of a fan of another team, they're likely to rear end them. You know the kind of person I'm talking about. If they're wearing one sports team's memorabilia, or they're wearing a ball cap from this team and somebody else is wearing a jersey from another team, they might actually go to blows over who's the best team. And you ever seen somebody like that? Some of the most ridiculous things. Now, some have argued with me and said, well, Pastor, at least it's a real thing. Comic book characters. Have you ever heard somebody having an argument who's better, Superman or Batman? Of all of the ridiculous things that you could argue about in your life, that you could waste breath on, because we all know it's Superman. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, so many people waste so much time arguing and getting sidetracked off of things that don't matter. One time, a young lady came to church and she told me, "Pastor, I need you to pray for me. I'm so broken over what's going on in this person's life and I can't believe it." And she was crying, and I prayed for her and asked her afterward. I said, "Who is this person?" And it was a person on her favorite soap opera. And she was all broken up about it and crying and wanting prayer over this thing that was just tearing her up. And you would laugh. Hopefully, you're laughing with me. We had a neighbor in Nicaragua who decided that she wanted to see her soap opera. So she left her newborn baby in her crib and she went next door, a couple doors down, to watch a soap opera. Came home to find her house on fire and the baby had passed away because she had an iron that was on that she forgot about. Now, I tell you the consequences of this ridiculous thought, to leave your newborn baby unattended at home so you can go a few doors down to watch television, a soap opera, and you say, "Well, that is just ridiculous." But how many times do we allow simple, ridiculous things of the world to sidetrack us completely in our hearts and minds? And when we look at Esau, he was completely sidetracked by something so ridiculous, something as simple as the color red. He lost his birthright over it. He chose whom he married and where he lived by it. Something so ridiculous as the color red. And yet to this day, we choose so many things that are so ridiculous to focus and to direct our lives. How many of you have ever set your schedule according to your favorite TV show? How many of you have ever set your finances according to your favorite brand of clothing? Something as ridiculous as a brand or a television show that we would get so sidetracked. And so it's very easy, isn't it, to get sidetracked in the flesh, isn't it? Isn't it very easy to be focused on the wrong things that absolutely don't matter? So much so that we arrange our entire lives around them, just like Edom did, just like Redhead did. The word Edom is the equivalent of the word from the 60s and 50s, and even it's sometimes used today, but more today it's a little more seemingly derogatory. But the word they used to use for redheads was ginger. And if you've ever seen Gilligan's Island, you remember that there was a character on there, and her name was Ginger because she was a redhead. And that's the idea. He was Ginger. That's the equivalent in the English to Edom. He was known as Ginger because he was a redhead and he had big red hairy arms. And he loved red. Everything was red, 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 red. But his infatuation with that simple thing caused him to walk away from the Lord. Now his infatuation was choosing the red lentil soup over his birthright. We could say, "Well, yeah, he really didn't care about his birthright at all, Pastor. That was really the big major problem with him, is that he didn't care for his birthright." Yes, but he got sidetracked by other things. And his heart wasn't right. And because his heart wasn't right, that's why he got sidetracked by something as simple as the color red. You know, if your heart was right, you wouldn't go three doors down leaving your newborn baby alone in the house so you could watch television. We couldn't say that it's the television's fault. You can't say that we should outlaw red lentil soup in the world because it's going to cause people to sell their birthrights. We can't say that we should outlaw watching TV because people get sidetracked by it, or that we shouldn't allow people to wear designer clothing because people can get too caught up in it. No, the clothing isn't the issue here. Being a sports fan is not the issue. You can be a sports fan as much as you want, as long as your priorities and your heart stays focused on Christ. But therein lies the problem. If your heart isn't right, then your desires, your passions, your finances, and your treasures will not be right. Because Jesus said, "Where your treasures lie, where your treasures are, there will your heart be also." You see, if your treasures are for Christ, you can have other things. But, you know, I have lots of stuff at my house. We have pictures on the walls, and we have, my kids have bikes in the backyard, and I have tools in my garage, and we have stuff. But a few months ago, when there were helicopters flying over our home telling us to evacuate because there was a huge forest fire going to consume all of our city, and my wife is calling me up on the phone saying, what do we do? And what do you want me to pack up for you? That's when you learn what your treasures are. I told her, get the kids, give me a change of clothes, and grab my study Bible and get in the car. I didn't need her to pack up my tools or get all the rest of my books, or my books are replaceable. Our stuff, it didn't really matter. I wanted her and the kids in the car and out of there. That was it. I did ask her to grab all of our legal documents because dealing with the bureaucracy of a government is not my idea of fun. So I did ask her to grab. We have all of our stuff in a little file. All you have to do is grab one file and you got everything. And she did. You know, if you had to choose one thing in your life to save, what would it be? Where's your focus? Where's your heart? Where's your treasure? You might not look at it that way, but you might want to look at it a different way then. When you think about what you treasure and what you have in your life, when you get time, what's the first thing you spend your time on? If you had time is worth more than money, in my opinion. Because you know what? You don't have to have money. And if you don't have money, you can't spend money. But every second that passes, you spend time. And you can never get it back. Some of you parents whose kids have grown up or who are almost grown up, you're coming to the end of your parenting ability where your kids are moving out of the house and you're not going to have such an influential place in their lives, and you're thinking, man, if I could only go back. But you can't, because you spent it. It's gone. Once you spend it, it's gone. You can never take it back. Once you've wasted so much time, that's why I don't understand how people can get so easily divorced. Do they not realize that they've put in after 25 years of marriage? I see so many couples getting divorced. Do they not realize you can't get those 25 years back? The minute you get divorced, you're saying you've wasted your time on this person and I'm no longer going to care about this person and it was all a waste. I've wasted 25 years, a quarter of a century. Can you imagine? And so many times, kids today don't understand the importance of time. Gaming today has become a multi-billion dollar industry. Video games. I have nothing against video games. I love video games. I don't play them anymore. When I was a kid, I remember my first gaming system. It was a Nintendo. Actually, if you want to count the Commodore 64 computer that I had, well, that could have been considered my first gaming system. But the first actual box dedicated only for gaming. See, before that, everything was a computer that also played games. The Atari was basically a little computer that also played games. The Apple II was a computer that also played games, but when you got to the Nintendo, it was dedicated to wasting time. It had no productive value whatsoever at all. And then they came out with the Holy Grail, a portable Nintendo called a Game Boy. Anybody remember those? I remember I bought my first Game Boy from the game store down the street from my house for $89 and tax. And back in the day, that was a lot of money, folks. And I ended up having over $300 worth of games and attachments and controllers and a case. And this is back in the 80s when that was a lot of money. And so much time to waste. Back then, gaming was a multi-million dollar industry. But today, people spend billions of dollars to waste their time. Is it wrong to play games? Absolutely not. But where your treasures are, there your heart is also. I want to ask you a question. Is it wrong to play a video game every once in a while? No, but when I used to play games, it wasn't every once in a while. It was every waking moment. I remember the first time I got this one game and I decided I was going to start playing it. And I started on like a Friday afternoon, a Friday evening. And I played all night Friday, all day Saturday, all night Saturday night. And I went to church the next day completely red-eyed. I hadn't slept in 2 days because I was trying to beat the game. After church on Sunday morning, I went back to my game. I played for 4 days straight until I passed that game. And then I turned it off, praying that there wouldn't be a power outage in between now and the time that I got to go back to my game. And I think back at how much time I wasted. And the Lord really convicted me a number of years ago, a couple of decades ago. He said, you need to put this away. Because it's wasting your time. Remember, your time is spent whether you like it or not. And each of us have a finite amount of time to spend. And yet we choose to waste it. How many of you couples choose to give your spouse the cold shoulder and not deal with your problems because you're frustrated and you're angry and you just figure time will fix it, but what you're doing is wasting time? You know what the Bible says about that? The Bible says, do not allow the sun to go down on your wrath. For take care of your problems today while it is still called day. I want you to consider that idea that time is valuable. Don't waste your time being mad at your spouse. Deal with your issues and take care of them. Esau never dealt with his issues. He wasted time. He wasted 20 years being mad at his brother. And for what use? None whatsoever. Where your time is, I want you to think about that, though. When you are given extra time, if you get a day off unexpectedly or you get home early because the traffic wasn't that bad today, how do you spend your time? Because where your treasures are, there your heart will be also. And your time is one of the most valuable treasures that you have. Where do you spend your finances? You get a bonus and you don't have to deal with your bills. I can spend a little bit extra. What are you going to spend that on today? Some of you have learned of Amazon's evil wish list. I hate that thing. Found myself putting everything in that wish list. And every time I had a little bit extra money, what would I do? Hey, I got some more money. Buy the wish list. Whatever's the next thing in my wish list, let's just get that. And the Lord had to convict me of that. No, don't do that. Do you really need that? Because I would get a letter from the missionary saying, hey, we need a little bit extra money to put a roof on the back porch so that we can have fellowship time out there. Or, hey, we had a water leak and we had to buy a new water tank and it's going to cost us $400. And I would read those emails and say, oh, that's so sad. Hey, look, my wish list. And it was so easy to focus on these ridiculous things that I absolutely did not need. But hey, Amazon remembers what I don't need for me. And you see, because my treasures were somewhere else, my focus wasn't where it should have been. Turn that off, and next time the missionary say, hey, Deanna's sick. She has to go to the next city over to get a treatment or an endoscopy or something like that, and we don't have the money to take her. And then it's easier to say, hey, go to the mission site because I got this little bit of extra money that the Lord gave me. And because my head is clear and my heart is focused on Him, it's easy to put my treasures where they belong. It's a matter of your heart. You know, when you first get your finances, one of the things that the Lord talks about in His Word is tithing. Why? Because it's a constant recognition of God, this is where my heart is. You are first on my list in all things. God, you are first on my list in my time, because when I get up in the morning, you're going to be the first one I go to talk to read your word, to pray, and to prepare for my day. God, in my finances, as soon as I get my check, you're the first person that I'm going to recognize with my finances, not my wife, not my kids, not my bills, but you. So I'm going to give you your 10% off the top. And it used to be a lot harder to give 10% off the top because you would write that check and then you'd have to hold it till Sunday and hopefully not spend it before you put the check into the offering box or the offering bag that came around. And you remember how hard that used to be? So the Lord invented online tithing. Isn't that awesome? So now you can get your check and you can go right to the church website and you can say, click, it's gone. It's pulled out of my account. I don't have to worry about it. And it's not there anymore. I can actually budget, because most people now, they don't actually use a check register or a budget book or any. They check the balance on their phone to know how much money they have. That's usually how a lot of people work nowadays. They don't actually know what they have or how much they have to spend anymore. And that's okay. It's not the best. I don't encourage that. But you know, when we get our money, the first thing that we want to do is what? God, here's yours. Because where your treasures are, there your heart is also. When we have extra time, you know, if you got home early today because the traffic wasn't bad, maybe you forgot to do your devotion in the morning. What did you do when you got home? Oh, I got this laundry list of things to do at home. Or did you go into your room and close your door and you take some time to pray? And say, God, you know, I didn't see you this morning. Esau, the ginger, the redhead, Edom. So sidetracked by so many silly, futile things that didn't matter. And because of that, he ended up walking away from the Lord and his promises completely. His descendants antagonized the children of promise to the point where God had to destroy them. Because he was sidetracked by the things of the flesh that didn't matter. Be careful where your priorities are. Be careful where your heart is. So it says here, Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan. And it goes on and it talks about his wives. Ada, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and Ahilbama. Now you can call that maybe by a hick name. Ahilbama, the daughters of Anna, the daughter of Zibeon, the Hivite, and Basemath. She wasn't really good at math. Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebajoth. Now Ada bore Eliphaz to Esau, and Basemath, the bad mathematician, bore Reuel. And Aholibama, one of the harder ones, bore Jesh, and Jalem, and Korah. And these were the sons of Esau who were born to him in the land of Canaan. Now I find it interesting. What was the problem here? I take note that the problem could have been with the names of his children, but no, in their culture, that was okay. The names were fine. The names weren't the problem. You know what the problem was here? Look in verse 1. It says, and Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan. Remember what Abraham did for Isaac? He sent his servant all the way back to his homeland and said, go get me a wife for my son, who's not of the Canaanites, for we will not be of the Canaanites. Remember where Jacob got his wife? All the way back from his dad's homeland, that he would not have a daughter or a wife from the Canaanites. They knew they were supposed to be separate. They knew they were supposed to be different. The issue was not a racial issue. It was not necessarily a physical issue, because we find out later, and some people use this to say that God was a racist or that Christians and Jews are racist, but no, God very clearly had no problem with the race of the people. If you remember in the book of Ruth, Ruth nationalized as a Jew, and because of that was part of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And she wasn't a Jew. It wasn't the problem of racism. It was a problem of the heart. See, the people of Canaan burned their children in the arms of Molech, and they murdered one another, and they lived and served and worshipped for idols. And they were completely given over to the things of the enemy. And because of that, the Lord said, you do not marry these children of the flesh. And today when I talk to young people and they say, well, Pastor, I can save him. I can change him. That's great. They might be a great mission field, but they are not marriage material. And one of the problems is that people think that, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I can change this. I can change that. But they're going to change you faster than you can change them. They're going to get you sidetracked and focused on the wrong things faster than you can get them on track, focused on the right things. And you'll find that you'll struggle for many years trying to make it work and trying to get that to taken care of. And it'll be very hard and difficult for you. And I don't recommend it for anyone. The Lord said, do not be unequally yoked. But the problem was, and this is one of the first, well, not one of the first, but one of the issues that Esau had. Remember, his first issue was what? His priorities were wrong. He was always looking at the worthless, the pointless, the vain things of life instead of what really mattered. But here we see another problem, and that was that he was united and bound to the world. And I'd like you to write that on that first line of your outline. He was bound and united. And if you don't have outlines, then get a piece of paper out and write it on there. How many of you have the back of your hand that's not written on yet? You can use that. But I want to encourage you that the first problem that we have here was that they were united to the world. You see, he had joined himself to the things of the world, and many times we're united with the world. And it doesn't have to be just through marriage. It can be through the clubs that you join. It can be through the music groups that you like, or even like if you listen to music and you have their bumper stickers and you have all that stuff and you have the same hairdos and all that other stuff, the TV shows that you watch or the friends that you keep or the hobbies that you have. All of these things can unite you with the world. All of these things can focus you on the wrong thing. And if you're out there listening to secular music, you are listening to the wrong stuff. Just recently, Bruno Mars was playing, and he won a bunch of awards and all this other stuff, and I was hearing about this guy. I'd never heard of him before. And a friend of mine who was from the Philippines started talking to me about Bruno Mars and how everybody in the Philippines loves Bruno Mars because he's like the only one who ever broke out and did something like famous in music. And so they were talking about one of his songs, and I looked up the words on the internet, and I got the lyrics, and I was reading the words, and I asked my friend, I said, you listen to this song? He goes, yeah, it's got a really good beat, and I really like the way that he sings it. And I said, have you listened to the words? Some are downright satanic. Completely vile. You can't listen to secular music today without being encouraged to be promiscuous and a drug addict and an alcoholic and to abuse others and to hate others and to only be prideful and cynical and evil in your thoughts and your mind and your desires. You can't do it. You know, how many times do people join themselves in union and bondage to the world? In a permanent way. And it can't happen. He took his wives from the land of Canaan, the daughters of Canaan. You know, it's not wrong to listen to music. It's not wrong to watch TV. It's not wrong to be a member of a Facebook page or to belong to some hobby or group. But remember something, that what you bind yourself to, you're also a slave to. Esau, he went for the beauty of the world rather than what God had for him. And it caused him to get off track and go the wrong direction. Now, at this time, he's still in the land of Canaan. Remember, he's still in the promised land. But what he has done is he has started to join himself to the world, and his focus is slowly getting off of the Lord and off of the promise of Abraham and Isaac. And his focus is getting onto the things of the world rather than on the promises of God and what God has for him. And so what happens? Look at verse 6. Well, then Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all of the persons of his household, his cattle and his animals and all of the goods which he had gained in the land of Canaan. He was a very wealthy man. Remember when his brother came back and how many presents he gave him? Plus what he had inherited from Isaac, plus whatever he had gotten on his own as being successful. Remember, God had continued to bless him. So he had a lot of possessions, Just like Lot had a lot of possessions when he was hanging out with Abraham. And it says here, and he went to a country away from the presence of his brother Jacob, for their possessions were too great for them to dwell together, and the land where they were strangers could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Esau is Ginger. Now, when you look at this, you see something crazy. Esau makes a decision to separate himself from the godly promises. It started subtle. It started with the soup that he ate and the company that he kept. And then he married into the flesh, and he, every step of the way, he's walking further and further and further away from the promises, and he's hating his brother who got the promise. So he's starting to hate even the promises that God gave because he didn't get them himself, and he couldn't have them because he was not walking rightly. He had the same attitude as Cain. If you remember, Cain hated his brother Abel. And the Lord spoke to Cain directly and said, Cain, if you do what's right, will you not be accepted? But if you don't do what's right, be very aware, for sin's desire is for you, and it lies in wait at the door. And what had happened was these 20-something years of bitterness and the frustration and the anger and the being joined to the world instead of focused on the promises of God had caused him to walk away from the promises. And here he separates himself from the promises. He separates himself from the promises. And you know, Casting Crowns is a very wonderful band. I love them. And they have a song out there that talks about that people never crumble in a day. People never crumble in a day. Anytime you see somebody fall away from the Lord and backslide or just completely stop following God at all, and they hate his promises and they despise the children of promise like Esau did, you have to understand that that didn't start overnight. Whatever excuse that they give you at the time, you have to understand that that excuse was not the reason why they walked away from God. Esau didn't walk away from God and his promises because of his brother. The excuse here was that their possessions were too great. But the reason was that his heart was far from God. And that is the only reason why people walk away from the Lord. They have chosen to focus on other things, and they have left the promises of God because they have chosen the things of the world. That's the only reason why people walk away from the Lord. We love, by the way, to blame others for our problems. Remember the first sin in history? God says, Adam, what did you do? And he says, she did it. And he says, Eve, what did you do? And she says, he did it. And he says, Satan, what did you do? And he had nobody to blame. He's like, man. We love, since the first sin until now, to blame everybody else but ourselves, don't we? Well, it's not my fault because I was born this way is the newest trend. Psychology loves to say, it's not your fault. You were born that way. Or you were raised that way. It's not your fault. And while the parents, the Bible does put a huge burden on your shoulders saying, train up your children in the way that they should go, that when they grow old, they will not depart from it. Kids, you understand something, that you are responsible for the choices that you make, because Romans chapter 1 is very clear that God's signature is on every part of your body. Every aspect of your DNA has his handiwork written all over it. And you have the ability to know God and to know who God is and to know about God. And you made the choice yourself. James says, don't say that you're tempted when you're tempted by God, that you're tempted by God, because God can't be tempted. Nor does God tempt anyone. So it's not nature and it's not nurture. There's a third option. For each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. God says you are the only one to blame for your choices. Period. You can't blame God. You can't blame your upbringing. You can't blame that billboard. Edom couldn't blame the red rocks or the red lentil soup or how beautiful the women were. The issue was is that his heart treasured everything else but God. And that is why he walked away. And it didn't happen overnight. It happened over a long period of time. Now, Abraham and Isaac had the same problem that Jacob and Edom had. What was that problem? The problem was that they had so many possessions, the land that they were in could not support them all. Now, they used that excuse to try to get to let Edom go away, to let Esau take off. Economic reasons led him away from the promised land. At least that's what he told people. I had to get out of there. You know, finances weren't all that great, and the cattle had nowhere to eat, and I was going to lose my herd, so I decided that it was time to take off. Now, was that his only option? As I think about this, there was a lot of different options, weren't there? Number one, couldn't he have just sent and sold all of his, or some of his possessions, sold some of his cattle, sold some of his sheep, sold some of his camels? Couldn't he have done that? Couldn't he have worked in maybe bolstering his ability to feed his animals by, I mean, Israel's a pretty big place. Remember, the promised land is huge. He didn't have to leave it. It's interesting that he left it. He just went completely out of it. He walked away from the promised land. You know, it's interesting. Financial problems have a tendency to direct our minds many times, don't they? How many of you have ever made a decision based on finances alone? What car to buy? What house to buy? Where to work? Where to live? You know, I got to take this job. I got nothing. I've been out of work for 5 months, and this is the only thing available to me. I'm going to have to take it. So where's your new job at? A bar. But pastor, it was the only thing I could find. You don't understand. No, I understand quite well. Sometimes to serve God requires sacrifice. Esau wasn't willing to sell some of his animals so that way there would be room for him in the promised land, or to set up another city south where he could have made a name for himself, or even to the north where he could have protected his animals and stayed in the promised land. It wasn't the finances that was really the issue. The real issue was his heart. He hated his brother. He despised God and his promises because he wasn't a participant in them. Therefore, he left the entire promised land altogether. Although this financial thing was a great cover, it wasn't the real reason. There were other things that he could do. And many times we make decisions based on finances or other things, not because we had to, but because, well, we were too far from God, or we weren't following what he had for us to do, or we despised what he had promised us and we didn't want it anyway. Pastor, I got to marry this girl because she's the only one around. Almost 7 billion people on the planet. I'm sure that you'll be all right. Pastor, I've got to take this job. It's the only one around. Not true. Not true. No, pastor, you don't understand. I have to buy that house. It's the only one I like. Now we're getting somewhere. You're at least admitting that it's about choice. So a lot of times we like to blame our circumstances for why we make our choices, but I say we choose our circumstances. He could have downsized. He could have done a lot of different things. But instead, what did he do? He chose to run away. So he does. He runs away. He separated himself from God. He separated himself from the promise. He separated himself. So many people today, they don't want to deal with their problems in their own heart. You know, as people sometimes leave the church and they're upset with someone else, they don't say that's why they left. Oh, well, you know, we went to this other church that's a little closer to our house, or that's a little easier. And I hear a lot of excuses. And when people come here, I ask them, so where did you used to go? And they say, oh, I went over here. Why'd you leave? And if they were a part of a division there, guess what I'm going to send them to do? Go back and say you're sorry to your pastor. And if he wants to send you over here, then I'll accept you back. But till then, you need to go back and apologize for causing a division over there. That's the example that we have with Paul sending Philemon and Epaphroditus to reconcile. No, When he found out, he says, no, you know what? You need to go back to Philemon and you need to apologize. And if he kills you, fine. But it was never right that you left in the first place. And Paul writes him this really great letter, hoping that he would read it before he killed Epaphroditus. You know, sometimes to do what's right takes a hard choice and decision. But if somebody gets a divorce, it's never for the reasons why they got a divorce. The number one reason nowadays now that California has a no-fault divorce system, meaning that you're not financially liable if you initiate a divorce. Used to be, if you were the one initiating a divorce, you got nothing. I really like that system, by the way. With a couple of conditions. You know, if there's a husband who beats his wife and she's asking for a divorce, or if you can, it used to be trials were really heavy on divorces, and you would actually have a trial and the husband or the wife would be put on trial. And if you could prove infidelity, then they got nothing. It was wonderful. The divorce rate was like nothing. People tried to work out their issues. And the one who wasn't faithful was the one who was trying to work out their issues the most. It really helped. But now we have this thing called no-fault divorce. You can just say unresolved differences. Nobody's at fault. And everybody just gets to pretend like nothing went wrong. It's just that we couldn't work things out. We were incompatible. Which is why the new generation wants to do away with marriage in the first place. They're asking, why redefine marriage? Let's just get rid of it. Let's just turn off marriage altogether and just have people live together. What's the point anyway? Because we have just said, oh, it doesn't matter. And when you look at what people do, they join themselves and then they tear away. And whenever you see a couple breaking up, it's not because, well, of this one thing or this other thing. It's usually a long road of making bad choices and having the wrong heart. And both sides of that couple are not doing the right thing. It's not just the husband did this or the wife did that. It's a long road of people making really bad decisions and allowing the world to influence them and allowing the relationship to go cold. And their relationship with God is non-existent. And they keep each of them attaching to the world in different ways until they're pulled apart completely. The last part of the chapter is a lot of names. Verses 9 through 43. We're not going to go through all of them. I encourage you to go through there and read them and whatnot. But I want to end with this. It talks about all of the genealogy of Esau. And it just talks about all these names. And there's a lot of nice stuff in there. But for brevity's sake, it talks about the wife of Esau who wasn't very good at math, base math. And it talks about all of his sons and the chiefs and all these kids and all of this stuff. But I want to encourage you with one thing. Be careful, parents. The lifestyle that you set now, you know, a lot of parents, they think that, oh, if I get a divorce or if I do this or if I do that, it's not going to affect my kids. It's my decision that I'm making for me. A lot of people think that if I live this way, if I choose that job, it doesn't affect my children. If I go to church or don't go to church, if I tithe or if I don't tithe, it doesn't matter. As long as, you know, I can always train my kids later and I can, it's, you know, they'll be okay. And that's not true. There was even a movie out a while back. I think it was titled The Kids Are Okay or something like that. And it was about the two lesbians raising kids and the husband and all this other stuff. The father was out of the picture, and he comes back and finds him, and they were trying to explain to people that you can have a broken home and a bad relationship and do all these awful things, and your kids will be okay anyway. Don't even worry about it. And I was sickened when I heard about that movie. I never watched it. Couldn't bring myself to do it. Don't encourage you to do it. But, you know, the world thinks that it's okay. They'll be fine. Just do whatever you want and focus on you. And parents, the choices that you make today to adhere and to cling to and to hold on to the Lord and his promises and his purposes for you and his desires for you and the things of God. You know, your kids watch you. And they act just like you. And they do what you do. And they will continue to do what you do. I work on my computer a lot at home because I study on it and I help our missionaries with their their computer problems and the radio station and whatnot. And the other day, my daughter, Sarah, grabbed her little play computer and she was sitting. I didn't even know it until I heard some clicking sounds and I looked around the corner and she's sitting on the floor with a stool as a desk. And she's I'm typing on my computer and she's typing on her computer watching me and doing the same thing. And I had no idea she was even there. Hey, Sarah, what are you doing? I'm working with you, Dad. Parents, you need to realize that your children are watching you. And the decisions that you make now are influencing them. Esau made some pretty bad decisions. You know what his kids did? For the next almost 700 years, his kids attacked and hated and despised the Israelites. They despised the promises of God. They despised the promised land. They despised everybody in it because they weren't a part of it, because they had lost it, because they were on the right wrong focus and the wrong ideas. And they were so attached to the things of this world that they were so mad and bitter and angry that they killed and they murdered and they stole and they destroyed as much as they could because they hated the Jews. I want you to think about that for just a minute. They grew in the world and they grew up with the world and they were attached to the world and they carried out their father's bitterness and anger and frustration. This should be a wake-up call for each of us. As we serve the Lord, I want to challenge you. Are you focused on the right things? How do you spend your time? The most valuable thing, hands down, that you have is time. How do you spend it? How do you spend your finances? How do you spend your relationships? Where are your treasures? Do you treasure the promises of God above everything else? Do you promise the work of God? Do you value the work of God above everything else? Do you value God's desire for your life above everything else? Do you make decisions based on God's promises and God's plan rather than your finances and your situation? Are you focused completely on what God has for your life? Are you teaching your kids to be focused completely on what God has for your life? Are you teaching them to honor God with their finances, to honor God with their time, to honor God in His purposes and plans and promises for them? Are you teaching them in the way that they should go? I want to challenge you that today is the day that we should keep the Lord at the forefront of our lives and watch as He blesses us. You know, God never stopped blessing Edom. Notice, He's got a lot of kids. He's from verse 9 to 43 is a lot of verses just about His kids, isn't it? God didn't stop blessing him because He was trying to draw him back. And maybe God's been blessing you, but God says, come back to me. Come back to me. Don't run away. So, Father, as we come before you tonight, we pray that you would help us to make proper decisions, Father, not based upon our desires, not based upon our frustrations, not based upon the world, but, Father, based upon your promises, your provision, Father, your faithfulness, and your guidance. We pray that you'd help us to spend our time wisely, that you'd help us to spend our hearts properly, Father, our finances in a way that honors you. And Lord, as we come before you tonight, we ask that you would just prepare us for the week ahead to make right decisions. You'd help us to wake up early, that we would be focused on you from the dawning of the day, even to the closing of the night. Father, that throughout the day we would come to you and that we would ask you questions, that we would seek your wisdom and guidance. Father, that we would be in your word, that we would spend our lives wisely. And Lord, as we come before you today, I pray that you would just bless each one. Let your face shine brightly upon each one here tonight. For those who are sick, heal them. For those who are weary, strengthen them. For those who are frustrated, Father, give them your unspeakable joy that no one can understand. But Father, tonight, comfort, heal, direct, and guide each one. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray.